It is Monday, September 3rd, 2012. This is a Labor Day edition of Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. Ahead on this holiday version of the program, Peter Lippincott picks up his guitar and mandolin, ukulele, and other instruments for his CD, Making Lemonade. Tomorrow night, he'll perform many of the songs from the CD live for the Music on the Mountain series on Mount Sequoia. We'll talk to him. Plus, Roby Brock from TalkBusiness.net looks back at a very busy late summer week in business and politics in Arkansas and our audio salute to working. But first, the Bentonville School District has been growing by leaps and bounds. Last week, the school board approved some expansion projects that incurred, they say, no additional cost to taxpayers. Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis spoke with Bentonville School Superintendent Michael Poor on Friday about the plans.
First of all, could you tell me what exactly these expansion plans are?
We actually have some money that we're kind of pleased that it's available to us. The money for these projects come as a result of us coming in under budget on all of the bond projects that we've done up to this point on a millage that was passed in 2010. And so money that has been saved by, you know, really doing good work with our architects and with our construction firms, we've saved, and that's created a pot of money. Secondly, we've been, I think, wise and fortunate in terms of how we've sold the bonds. And as a result of what we've done on that, we've actually gain some additional funds. And so the board on Wednesday night made a decision to do several things. One was to enhance our technology delivery, which is needed, and this will impact every single kid in our district. Second, they also voted to expand on four of our elementary schools.
Okay, now I know the technology, that was a part of the millage that failed earlier in the year. Was this just an effort looking at spare money and seeing what you could do with it, or?
Correct. It was to, you know, our technology need is still long-term in terms of what we have to do planning out, but we didn't want to waste another year of being even and falling even farther behind other surrounding districts. This allocation of resources will allow us to become wireless in all of our buildings, something that we currently don't have. It will enhance computer labs at all of our sites. And then finally, it'll help us with infrastructure needs in order to be able to support these enhanced things so that our technology, you know, will be efficient and running and serving kids.
On the expanding of the elementary schools, I understand that's going to be additional classroom space?
It is. And so three of the four schools will have four classrooms added onto it, and one of our elementaries will have actually eight classrooms. This really was needed because it's kind of one of those pleasant problems, a problem that many districts probably would love to have, but we ended up having over 1,000 new students come into Bentonville schools this year. We'd projected for only 500, and really that had been kind of our track mark of having 400 to 600 new kids. This year we had 1,000 new kids. And immediately when we got those kids, and the kindergarten group in particular is at a very high number, it made it so that we have no margin anymore, and we're actually transporting kids this year across three and four attendance zones to get to a school where there is room. By adding these additional classroom spaces, we'll be able to leave kids more in their neighborhood schools, and we also will be able to cut down on transportation costs that we incur right now by busing these kids all over trying to find a space where we have room.
These projects, the technology and the expansion projects, about how much are they going to cost and about how long is it going to take to construct them?
Well, this is one of the exciting parts, and we've got some work to do with architects and contractors, but the construction work for these additions on the elementary, our target is to have that done by June of 2013 so that we will be able to impact students and families going into the 2013-2014 school year.
So this is happening pretty quickly then.
We're going to work feverishly. It's going to create a whole new workload for my staff and for some of the construction firms, but that's going to be our target, and we believe that it can be accomplished And we feel like it's really necessary to get accomplished. So we're excited about that. The technology, it will happen. We'll start to work on that right away, and hopefully have those things in place also before the end of the school year.
Really quickly, I want to touch on another topic. What progress has been made on deciding what to do with the growing high school population?
You know, and I appreciate you asking that, Timothy, because a lot of people say, well, why didn't you use some of, I've heard at least some people say, why didn't you use the $7 million to try to soften the high school situation? Well, first off, people need to understand that in the state of Arkansas, you're very limited in terms of your class size. You can't exceed a certain number, and it depends on which grade level it is. So, in other words, a kindergarten classroom is going to have less students in it than a high school classroom. And at the elementary levels, our classrooms were all full, really across the entire district. We have very little space for additional elementary students. At the high school level, we also are full, but we have more flexibility in terms of what we can do with those high school kids in terms of schedules, as well as what we can even do with teachers on assignment. So in the past, let's say 5 years ago in Bentonville, a teacher might be teaching they're in their classroom for 5 hours during the day and then have 1 hour where they're in a planning period. Well, now that doesn't happen in Bentonville. I mean, everybody basically is on carts. Well over 50% of our staff are on carts and moving, and we're using every single room. We also are trying to elongate our day, and we'll continue to try to search into making the day longer because that's our next flexibility to try to deal with it. So high school does have more flexibility than elementary. We are looking at, you know, manipulating schedules, trying to bring in more of an online delivery over the next year, and that's why it was essential also to pass this technology component on Wednesday. And then finally, we still have to come forward to the voters because, as I tried to share earlier, $7 million really won't get you much in terms of a high school building with the requirements that the state asks. That might only really serve 200, 250 kids, which is only the growth for us for 1 year at a high school. So we've got to have a longer-term solution. We have a new board that's going to come into play. We have elections coming up in September. The new board will be in place in October, and we'll work with the new board and with our community to try to come up with a delivery that this community can say, we're behind it, we're going to vote for it. And we know we're going to have to be come in at a lower number, and we're looking at all those options right now.
Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis spoke with Bentonville School Superintendent Michael Poor about expansion plans in Bentonville on Friday. This is a Labor Day edition of Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. Isaac came to Arkansas last week. New unemployment figures were released, and there was a proposal to give some Arkansas companies a tax break. Roby Brock from our content partner TalkBusiness.net has this look back at the business and political news from the previous 7 days.
I'm Roby Brock with your Talk Business Update, a recap of the biggest business and political headlines of the last week. Entergy officials say more than 769,000 utility customers have been knocked offline by Hurricane Isaac in a three-state region that includes Arkansas. At its peak, early Thursday morning, Isaac left more than 769,000 customers in Arkansas, Louisiana, and Mississippi without power, making it the fourth most damaging storm in Entergy history in terms of outages. The only storms with larger customer impacts have been Katrina, Gustav, and Rita. St. Vincent Health System and the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences say they're exploring a potential affiliation as they signed a letter of intent. The move is a result of federal and state health care reform initiatives, which UAMS and St. Vincent officials describe as creating opportunities to improve and reduce each organization's health care costs. Windstream Corporation has been indicted on bribery and conspiracy charges related to a former Oklahoma school superintendent, but the company denies wrongdoing. Former Broken Arrow Superintendent of Schools Jim Sisney was also indicted in allegations regarding 2007 NCAA Final Four basketball tickets in Atlanta. The indictments outline a series of events in the early months of 2007 where Windstream identified its top sales customers for potential tickets and travel to the NCAA basketball tournament. All 8 metropolitan areas in or connected to Arkansas had jobless rate decreases in July compared to July 2011. Unfortunately, 7 of the 8 saw increases in the jobless rate between June of this year and July. During July, the lowest metro jobless rate was in Northwest Arkansas with 6.1%, and the highest rate was 9.8% in Pine Bluff. Arkansas's state unemployment rate was 7.3% in July. Arkansas Economic Development Commission Director Grant Tenniel told lawmakers that the state should consider eliminating the sales tax paid by manufacturers and other industries who upgrade their facilities. The tax break would affect state revenues by roughly $40 million a year. Tenniel said that the tax treatment has been cited by businesses as a reason to expand plants in other states instead of Arkansas. Governor Mike Beebe named Stan Witt of Austin as the new director of the Arkansas State Police on Monday. The announcement comes after Colonel J.R. Howard notified Beebe of his intention to retire. Beebe also announced that Ansel Lee of Conway will be the new coordinator for the Arkansas Office of Health Information Technology, taking over for retiring Ray Scott. Lee is currently the executive director of HIT Arkansas, a regional extension of health information efforts through the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. And business leaders from Northwest and Central Arkansas met a second time to develop an agenda for greater collaboration. The two groups met earlier this year in Fayetteville and Bentonville, with a quick outcome being a new marketing website to draw movie and TV productions to the state. The two groups met again last week in Little Rock and reported making progress on several fronts, including support for a highway tax proposal this November and a potential agenda for the 2013 legislative session. I'm Roby Brock, and that is your Talk Business Update.
It's Labor Day 2012. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Becca Martin Brown. She is the features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
We should have taken our pictures for the feature we did yesterday.
Which was?
Which was Men at Work.
Ah,
people working this weekend.
Laboring and
we
whatnot.
Should, we are laboring. Well, not really. We're having a good time hanging out with people we like. So today is the last day of the Prairie Grove Clothesline Fair.
Which is the tradition. It's always Labor Day weekend, or has been for as long as I can remember. And today it closes.
It's been around for 61 years, which is longer than War Eagle.
Right.
And it's just fun. It's not just all about crafts. There'll be displays of farm machinery and square dancers and lots of food and funnel cake, t-shirt, funnel cake basket. That's how that actually went. Yes, that's how you need to do that. 8:30 to 3 today at Prairie Grove Battlefield State Park. Have your $5 bill for parking.
Okay.
And Roots music maven Shelley King, the first woman to be named the Texas State Musician by governmental decree, is performing at Rogue Pizza Company tonight.
Really?
Showtime is 8 o'clock. She will play songs from her newest album, Welcome Home. And the ticket price is all of $5.
Great way to end a long weekend.
No reason to be bored today.
All right. Becca Martin Brown is the features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook. With Arkansas Songs.
I had the key to your heart, but I ain't got it no more. I had the key to your heart, but I ain't got it no more. Now something went wrong. Boys, I just don't know.
Roosevelt Sykes was born in Helena, Arkansas on January 31st, 1906. From one of the most influential and prolific of American blues cities, Sykes became one of the most influential and prolific of piano players and blues shouters.
I got a letter from Uncle Sam saying I had to go. You know I'm crazy about you, baby. I'm gonna miss you so. Yes, yes, yes.
Sykes moved to St. Louis when he was 15, and the uptown jazz and ragtime of that area combined with the Arkansas Delta blues he'd heard all his life. Sykes continued to visit Arkansas during summers, and the mix helped create his own style. In June 1929, the very first song Roosevelt Sykes ever recorded was a hit and stayed with him over his career. 44 Blues has been recorded by many artists, including others with Arkansas ties, like James Peck Curtis, Little Feat, and Howlin' Wolf.
I wore my 44 so long, I done made my shoulders sore.
The Phillips County native formed a full band called the Honey Drippers, after his own nickname, given to him by singer Edith Johnson. Throughout the 1930s and 40s, the Honey Drippers toured and recorded constantly. Roosevelt Sykes kept the Honey Drippers together until the mid-1950s.
I like what you did when you did what you done last night. I like what you did when you did what you done last night. I like what you did when the lights were low, just me and you and the radio. I like what you did what you done last night.
Sykes lived in Chicago, St. Louis, and Gulfport, Mississippi over the years. In 1962, the native Arkansasian moved to Louisiana around the time he made the recordings heard here. In New Orleans, he influenced rhythm and blues piano men like Fats Domino. In addition to his vocal and instrumental talent, the songs of Roosevelt Sykes have proven durable. Nighttime is the Right Time has become a chestnut, perhaps most famously covered by Ray Charles, while Driving Wheel is a blues standard recorded by B.B. King, Junior Wells, Junior Parker, and other Arkansasians like Robert Jr. Lockwood, Albert King, and Luther Allison. And here's an R&B version by fellow East Arkansas native Al Green from a 45 on High Records. Roosevelt Sykes continued to play festivals and club dates and occasionally record until his death on July 17, 1983, having influenced generations of rockers, R&B singers, and pianists of all genres. Here's Roosevelt Sykes of Helena, Arkansas in the early 1960s with Kickin' Motor Scooter.
Squeeze me tight, don't let me fall. Put my mule a kicking in your stall, a kicking motor scooter, don't you know? A kicking motor scooter, don't you know? He's a kicking motor scooter, I wouldn't tell you no lie. Take your time and be yourself. I'll be waiting and you won't be left. I treat you mean, I tried to treat you good. You won't do the thing that you should. Use an unusual motor scooter, don't you know? Undependable motor scooter, don't you know? Unusual motor scooter, I wouldn't tell you no lie. Well, yeah. Crazy about the gal, and that's a fact. I'm gonna raise some sand if she don't take me back. I'm a dangerous motor scooter, don't you know? A tricky motor scooter, don't you know? I'm a dangerous motor scooter, I wouldn't tell you no lie. Now there was a blind man by the name of Dell. He couldn't see, but he really could smell. The fish man passed the house the other day. He thought it was a gal, he hollered, hey, I'm going your way, a smelling motor scooter, don't you know? A smelling motor scooter, don't you know? Smelling motor scooter, I wouldn't tell you no lie. Well, now! Now, Mama, I got a hot dog, it ain't cold. It's just right to fit your roll. It's a fitting motor scooter, don't you know? A fitting motor scooter, don't you know? A tight-fitting motor scooter, I wouldn't tell you no lie. Oh, yeah! sitting in a man's house, I teased him with his wife. He made a pass at me like he wanted to take my life. Ice was on the ground 6 feet deep. I landed on my yes, yes, yes. Instead of my feet, I was a sliding motor scooter, don't you know? A slipping motor scooter, don't you know? I was a gliding motor scooter. I wouldn't tell you no lie.
Influential piano player and blues shouter, Roosevelt Sykes of Helena, Arkansas, with Kickin' Motor Scooter. It's another song of Arkansas. From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs.
Arkansongs is a production of FM 89 and Experiment Station Studios. For more information, visit arkansongs.org.
The first Tuesday music series at Mount Sequoia continues tomorrow night, and on stage will be Peter Lippincott with some of his friends. Many will know the name Peter Lippincott through pottery, through art. But it turns out that Peter has been playing musical instruments for some time. Isn't that true, Peter Lippincott?
That's very true, Kyle. I took piano lessons when I was quite small and played the clarinet in band. And alongside that, took up the guitar during the folk scare of the 1960s. So that'll give you some idea how long I've been at it.
Well, also on this CD, you play mandolin.
Yes.
Organ.
Yeah.
And let's see, I'm thinking
bass. Yeah. Harmonica.
So does picking up an instrument and figuring it out come relatively easy for you?
Well, I guess so, yeah. Most of the instruments that I work with are stringed instruments, you'll notice, but I did have those piano lessons, and I don't claim to be a great keyboardist, but one of the beauties of the new digital possibilities is that you can just put in a stream of notes from something. You don't have to do all the fingers in both hands. And so you can, when I did the organ, it was just to kind of augment what else I was doing.
You mentioned that you picked up the guitar during the folk scare, as you put it, of the 60s.
Yeah.
Peter, Paul, and Mary.
Absolutely.
Tom
yeah.
Paxton, that sort of.
Oh, yeah, Kingston Trio.
Kingston Trio.
Yeah, yeah. Tom Dooley was probably what tripped my trigger the first time.
How old were you when this was happening?
Oh, 12, when that was starting probably, and I got the guitar when I was 14. And
got it because it was a present, or?
No, because I wanted to learn how to play it and talk my folks into. I started off with a nylon string guitar, and by, I think, 63, I had been doing a paper route for a long time and went and bought myself a Martin, which cost $300 at the time.
Oh, my. That's pretty expensive.
Well,
I mean,
it doesn't seem so now.
Yeah, but paper route, $300, 1963.
Yeah.
And that was not an inexpensive instrument.
Oh, no, not at all. I know. It was top-of-the-line stuff.
When did you start writing songs?
Well, very early, probably when I was 12, I wrote a song called The Jumpin' Bug, and it just went on from there. I wrote quite a bit in high school because that was the Vietnam era, and I was heading toward 18, and I was a conscientious objector, and so I was writing songs and lining my file down at the draft board with material,
mm-hmm.
as well as supporting letters from people in the community and what anything I could find to put in there. So,
what an inspiration to write.
Yeah, well, yeah, it was kind of inspiration desperation.
Yeah. I'm assuming, it's always dangerous to assume, but I'm assuming that the CD, Making Lemonade, is your first, at least in a while.
It is the first, yeah. I appeared on some albums, the old vinyls, in college. That was a coffee house at the University of Illinois and called the Red Herring, and they put out a series of albums that were compilations of the people that sang at the coffee house back in the early 70s, late 60s, early 70s.
But so this is, you know, a dozen songs here, all. You know, this is you.
Yeah, that's me.
What was the origination of this? When did you first get the idea that this would become a physical object?
Well, let me back up a minute, because actually I put out a CD of fiddle tunes played on the mandolin, which all of which I wrote about a year and a half before this one.
Really?
So that all started because I had a mandolin with me when we were traveling in Spain, and I just started making up tunes and writing them down, and eventually I had a dozen of those. And one that I put on that mandolin record was much older. I wrote a fiddle tune like 35 years ago, which has now entered the oral tradition. And if you pull it up on YouTube, there are people in Norway playing it, and Michigan. And
you would just search?
Snake River Reel is the name of the tune, yeah.
I want to ask you about some of the songs on this. Unfair Craft Fair. This is the one that ends it.
Right.
You sing about experiences that many of us have had at craft fairs.
Well, I think so, yeah. They're called a craft fair, but actually the word fair at the end of it is to denote food, F-A-R-E. And that seems to be the thing that people like the most at a craft fair is the food. So it's that kind of a play on words and observation of the human element at a craft fair.
We went to the craft fair, we came on home. We didn't buy nothing but an ice cream cone, two Frito pies and a funnel cake, some kettle corn and a plastic snake. There was so much stuff, I mean it took a while to see everything down every aisle. Them artist folks was smiling and waving, but I'm just thinking of the money I'm saving.
Does it always really rain in Knoxville when you're there?
It did.
Really?
It did. I was going to a wholesale show in Baltimore, and we drove through Knoxville coming and going. It rained, and that was just enough to be the spark for a song, you know? Just a little idea, a line to get started.
Why does it always rain in Knoxville? They fit together hand in glove. Why does it always rain in Knoxville? On the tragic side of love. Today I got no destination like I had when you was here.
Does driving or traveling help you write? Or?
Oh, quite often, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. A lot of the writing that I did when I lived in St. Louis, I had an hour commute from Godfrey, Illinois, into St. Louis. Godfrey's up near Alton, north of the city. And I wrote a lot of songs just driving back and forth. You've got that time. And I just would have a pad of paper next to me and write without looking at it particularly. And
I was going to ask, because when you're driving,
yeah,
and maybe if you come up with
dangerous.
A great line,
right?
Could you always read what you had written without looking?
Well, because it was current, you know, if I would, by the time I got to my job, if I would sit down and kind of make it legible, that was helpful.
There's a song on here about a legendary Fort Smith figure, Bass Reeves.
Bass Reeves, yeah. Yeah, and Fort Smith has really gone out, all out in celebrating Bass Reeves, because Arkansas's first equestrian sculpture in bronze has been erected in Fort Smith at the Pendergraft Park down near the riverfront of Bass Reeves and his dog. So it's quite a deal for Fort Smith.
There was a U.S. Marshal, and he was true and good. Dead or alive, he got his man, it was well understood. He kept the law for Parker in Indian Territory. He was handy with his six gun, and his name, it was Bass Reeves. His life reads out like a legendary tale. You never would believe it, it's of such an epic scale. Born before the Civil War.
You know, I kind of spent the day the other day with Bass Reeves at the landfill.
The guy that plays
right.
Bass
Reeves. He's actually the director of the Department of Sanitation.
Exactly.
There.
Wild.
How many of these songs have you performed live?
Well, all of them.
Okay.
Yeah.
With the because you're going to have Emily Cates
right
on stage with you at Mount Sequoia and Dennis Collins
and Bruce Hawley. Mm-hmm.
That's. You know, that's a pretty good combo you've got there.
It is. I mean, we just had our last pre-practice last night, and things are flowing really, really well. It's just such a pleasure to work with them because they're all such great musicians. It's.
Have you played Clapp Auditorium before?
I haven't. No, I've been attending Music on the Mountain for the last couple years and started bugging Efren and Steve, who were doing the booking and making the arrangements at the time. I was bugging him and said, you know, I'd like to do this. And so
you know what everyone,
got the chance.
What everyone from Efren to Chase Missy, what everyone says about that room is it's really comfortable and it's a really, it's an overused word, but an intimate sort of setting.
It is.
It feels like you're among friends and family, even if it's some faces you don't know.
Absolutely. Yeah. The people that come to that show really come to honor the musicians and to hear the music. You know, nobody's drinking beer and nobody's chatting with their friend except maybe the occasional aside, you know. So it's the scariest kind of audience because they're really paying attention. But it's also the warmest and the most rewarding.
Yeah, I can understand why it would be somewhat scary. But on the other hand, I mean, you're not having to sing these songs that you've written that are part of you be completely ignored by diners or people clinking glasses or whatever.
Yeah. It's absolutely the best venue that that I will have played at.
There are 12 on the CD. Do you have a playlist yet? Did you put together a formal playlist for the show?
Oh, yeah. And a lot of the ones that are on the CD will be on the playlist, but I'm going to do some traditional material and some things that are newer than what made it on the CD. So,
and you'll have the CD there, right? People
absolutely.
Will be able to.
Yeah, it'll be available.
Let me ask also about Give Me Your Money. That starts the CD. What was the inspiration for that song?
I'm not sure I can say exactly. There's just so much in the air right now about the hard times that the country's going through and the difficulty that people are having. And it seemed to me an obvious way for someone to get ahead in this in these tough times is to just go out and take it into their own hands to have people give them money.
Give me your money and your diamond ring. Gotta give my honey pretty shiny thing. This ain't no robbery, it's a donation. Don't want no snobbery or a commotion. If you got any gold.
I've talked to you several times before, never really about your music, but you do so many things. You're left-brained, you're right-brained. Is writing and playing music like anything else you do? I mean, is it like the other artistic endeavors you have? Or is it a sort of wholly different discipline?
Well, I don't think I have an answer to that.
That's fair enough.
I have always loved to play with language. I remember very clearly one time when I was visiting a friend of my parents, and they had a dark room that they let me use, and I went up to talk to the wife of the family on my way out, and we would sit around and chat, and she used big words. And I went home and said to my parents, oh, I wish you would use big words like Pat does. That didn't go over too well. But, and it's not that I like to use big words, but I just love language, and I speak pretty much Spanish and do pretty well in French. And so evidently playing with words and language is something that does come easy to me.
You should do a song that's just all polysyllabic words, just the biggest words you could get, you know, in a chorus.
Be careful what you ask for, okay. Kyle.
It's at Mount Sequoia. It's in Clapp Auditorium. Starts at
7.
7. And one of the great things about these shows is they start at 7.
Yes.
You know, if you've gone to shows before that start at 7 and or 8 or 9 and you're still waiting at 10:30.
Right.
This is
right. And there's no opening act.
Right. Right.
So to wade through.
You do know what you'll open with.
Yeah, give me your money.
Okay, very good. They will already have. And Clapp Auditorium Restoration
right, right,
Fund.
Yeah, right, yeah, to support the Clapp Auditorium. Indeed.
If someone can't make it Tuesday night, they have another engagement or whatever, where could they find the CD or how could they?
Well, getting in touch with me is the way to do it right now. So, okay. Yeah.
By email or?
Yeah, email.
Okay.
peter@mudpuppy-studios.com. Or you can call me, 651-6104.
Simple enough.
Simple enough.
Thank you, Peter.
Okay, Kyle. Pleasure.
Peter Lippincott's CD is titled Making Lemonade. He'll perform tomorrow night at 7 in Clapp Auditorium on Mount Sequoia as part of their Music on the Mountain series. It's a fundraiser for the Clapp Auditorium Restoration Fund. This is Ozarks at Large. This is Ozarks at Large. The circus carries a certain air of intrigue and mystery. Acrobats, wild animals, and clowns in makeup. But the circus in Aaron Morgenstern's best-selling novel, Night Circus, goes well beyond all of that. In fact, there are no clowns or animals at this circus. Instead, tents that include worlds of ice and clouds. Tents that appear out of nowhere, then disappear just as quickly. The circus is actually a backdrop for a mysterious battle between two mysterious men and their protégés. More Alice's Wonderland or Oz than the greatest show on earth, Night Circus establishes a multi-layered realm that never quite lets the reader on to where it's headed. Aaron Morgenstern is with me on the phone. Aaron, welcome to Ozarks at Large.
Thank you very much for having me.
This is a fantasy land that you have set up quite unlike any other. When did you first get the idea for this story?
The idea came about almost by accident. I was working on a different book. I'm not much of an outliner when I write. I don't really plan that much, which sometimes works and sometimes doesn't. And I was working on a story, and it was going nowhere. It was boring me very much, so I needed something exciting to happen. And out of that boredom and desperation, I sent my characters to the circus. And the circus was immediately much more interesting, so I actually ended up abandoning the original story and instead focusing on this circus that had just appeared in my head and trying to figure out who created it and who performed in it and what its story was. And that's where the whole book developed from.
Well, you say you're not much of an outliner, but surely you had to have something going on as you're creating this book because it's told in nonlinear fiction. You have to pay very close attention to the dates at the beginning of each chapter. You have so many different characters. It's on two different continents. Surely you were keeping track as you were writing this, because there are a lot of details.
I am a very good reviser. So I start with all of this just free-form stuff, and it took me a long time to really find the story. I had a lot of plotless circus stuff without much of an actual structure to it, and it's actually when I started giving the book more structure as I was going through and revising it that it really started to fall into place. It was almost like I had all the jigsaw puzzle pieces, but it was just a matter of getting them in the right places and the right sequences.
The as I mentioned in the introduction, the battle is, there is a battle, a competition, a sort of event between these two men who we don't know much about as this story is unfolding, because you have to cover a lot of territory before we get to the circus. How did you develop their stories?
Their stories kind of came about almost easily. It's kind of funny to say, but I had circus, I had a lot of the characters, and they were there from the beginning, and I was kind of trying to figure out what they were up to. And then it became the question of, well, how long have they been up to it? And it all sort of fell into place a little bit when I was came about with the competition angle and made the whole circus into a game of chess. And I liked the idea that the players were being manipulated by something outside that was not involved. Like that, the idea of the puppetry with someone above pulling the strings.
I want to call these two mysterious men who launch this game of chess magicians, but there's so much more than that. In fact, when we first meet one of them, he has what amounts to a vaudeville show. He's performing on stages in the United States and Europe. And he has to, because he's so powerful, he has to draw back and make people think he's not quite as powerful as he is. He has to make them think that what they're seeing is fake and not real. It's an interesting concept.
I liked that idea that if you could do real magic, how, like, if you could just do it, what would how would people react to it? And I think you need to have that little bit of doubt to really play it as an audience. As someone's always looking for how it's done, and if you completely baffle someone, it's almost like they can't comprehend it, and you lose the entertainment value. It has to be an entertainment where people think they know what's going on, even if they maybe don't know exactly how it was done. They think they're still watching a trick.
Well, you kind of had to walk, my opinion, the same sort of tightrope, because there's so many fantastic things in this story. Did you ever think about, well, I can't go this far if I want to keep the reader's suspension of disbelief where I need it to be as a reader?
I think a little bit. I was kind of doing the same juggling act myself, with thinking, like, how much magic is still believable? Because I did want to maintain that idea that maybe people would think that the circus could show up in their own backyard and have it have that believability. And I like magic and fantasy that feels real. I'm not really a dragons and far-off castles sort of fantasy. I like the fantasy that seems like it's possible and real, and the tactile sort of fantasy. But I did think there were a few things that I did. I questioned how much people would go along for the ride, but I think in the end I found a fairly good balance.
When this circus is happening, people are going, and there are all these different tents that are being created by these proteges, you could just let your imagination run wild what these two people could create.
It's true, and actually I invented a lot of the tents before the story had a plot. So I kind of created the contents of each tent, and then it was fun for me to divide out, well, who had created what, and which acts that I'd already had fit with which character. And it was one of the reasons why my favorite tent is the Labyrinth, because it was the one tent that I was able to make a collaborative performance between both characters.
Right. And it's not really fair to call, it is called a circus and it's a carnival, but it's almost, for the people who go, a completely different dimension.
It is. I think it. The way I like to describe it is, it should feel like walking into a dream.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's the kind of feel it should have. Like you're in some place entirely separate from the world, and that's the feeling it should have, where you're in a space where like anything is possible.
You know, I may be overthinking this, but it struck me that the night circus that appears in people's cities or in fields outside their cities almost overnight, and then just disappears quickly too. It almost felt as if that could be a metaphor for falling in love or a crush, because all of a sudden it's there, you can't get enough of it, you're just, it's beyond anything you can think of, and then just almost as quickly, boom, it's gone.
Oh, I like that. I hadn't thought about it that way before, but I do like that. I think there's a lot of metaphors to be found in different aspects of the circus, from the way it travels and appears and disappears, or even just the structure of it, where it's cyclical and lots of little individual experiences all circling back to the same midpoint. But I like that a lot, and I think that it suits itself. I added the love story aspect very late in the revisions. It wasn't there when I first started writing, and I felt like that when I went for that Romeo and Juliet sort of feel is when the whole thing started to come together.
First published novel. It is not a novel that you can really accurately put into a paragraph-long synopsis because there's so much going on. It's nonlinear, and yet an overwhelming literary success. Did that surprise you?
Hugely surprised, especially because I spent so much time rewriting and revising and trying to make it book-shaped. I never really thought forward that much to even, I just wanted to get it published. I wasn't even thinking as far as what the response would be. I thought maybe there would be some people who would connect with it and be enthused about it, but I never expected the level of response that it's gotten.
You know, be it Twilight, be it Hunger Games, be it George R.R. Martin, everyone thinks that if something is somewhat fantastic, somewhat otherworldly or supernatural, it must be part of a series. But I've read interviews with you. You're adamant. This is it.
Nope,
you're writing something next that's completely different.
I am. I never intended it to be a series, and I don't want to try to make it something that it's not. And I like the way it ends. I don't have a whole lot of interest in what happens next as an immediate sequel. I think that aspect of it is better left up to the reader's imagination. I wouldn't be opposed at all to revisiting the world of the circus and maybe doing a collection of short pieces, exploring certain characters' backstories, maybe doing little tangential bits in tents you didn't see in this one. But it's not meant to be a series. It doesn't feel like it should be a series, so I'm not going to try to make it into one.
Finally, always your idea to tell the story in a nonlinear fashion?
It was. It was actually originally more nonlinear than the final version. And the final version is not quite nonlinear. It's two overlapping timelines.
Mm-hmm.
But I always did want to play with that aspect of time because I wanted to do the story. I wanted the story to feel like the circus, which is part of the reason it's told in short vignette-like chapters. Because the circus itself is a lot of different tents with different things. I wanted the book itself to have the same sort of feel.
The name of the book is The Night Circus. It is now out in paperback. It is written by Erin Morgenstern. She also has a website, which is
erinmorgenstern.com.
Easy enough to remember. Erin Morgenstern, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. It is Labor Day. Labor Day, sports fans claim, is the day that if your favorite baseball team is in first place, it's a pretty good shot they'll make the playoffs. Labor Day is the line of demarcation when many think that the real political campaigning begins in an election year. It is also a day for many of us that is, if not officially, at least emotionally, the end of summer. Hopefully, you've not had to labor today, but if you have, you're not alone. And this is our audio tribute to working. See how many of these 9 songs and movie clips you can identify.
Have I got your attention now? Good. Because we're adding a little something to this month's sales contest. As you all know, first prize is a Cadillac Eldorado. Anybody want to see second prize? Second prize, a set of steak knives. Third prize is you're fired.
You know, I'm aware of this management training thing you're doing tonight, and I'm worried it's going to affect your performance at work.
That's extracurricular, you know. Some people play golf.
Well, I play golf.
There you go. So,
yes, but I'm performing as I want me to perform. You're not performing as I want you to perform.
I'm performing as I want me to perform.
I don't want you to perform like that.
It's a good performance. Let's agree to disagree.
No, let's agree that you agree with me.
Working in a coal mine, going down, down, down. Working in a coal mine, about to step down. Working in a coal mine, going down, down, down. Working in a coal mine.
Mr. Mason, no one around here is on my side. And I'm not going to leave until I set down all your names on this piece of paper.
Lady, I want you off the premises now. You phone your husband, you come over here and tell him to fetch you. I want you out of here right quick.
Some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood.
muscle and blood and skin and bones, a mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16 tons. What do you get?
How does it feel to be an executive?
Oh, fine.
Sit down.
I want you to know I worked very hard to justify your confidence.
I'm sure. Say, Baxter, about the apartment. Now that you've got a raise, don't you think we can afford a second key?
Well, I guess so.
You know, my secretary, Miss Olson.
Oh, yeah, very attractive. Is she the lucky girl?
Oh, no, I just meant that she...
I have an appointment with Emily Charlton.
Andrea Sachs.
Yes?
Great. Human resources certainly has an odd sense of humor. Follow me.
Okay, so I was Miranda's second assistant, but her first assistant recently got promoted, and so now I'm the first.
Oh, and you're replacing yourself.
Well, I am trying. Miranda sacked the last two girls after only a few weeks. We need to find someone who can survive here. Do you understand?
Yeah, of course.
You apparently didn't put one of the new cover sheets on your TPS reports.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry about that. I forgot.
Yeah. You see, we're putting the cover sheets on all TPS reports now before they go out. Did you see the memo about this?
Yeah.
And here's hoping that you have a Labor Day free of TPS reports. If you'd like to see all of the clips identified, you can go to our webpage, ozarksatlarge.com, and look for today's program. KUAF is supported by Pack Rat Outdoor Center in Fayetteville, dedicated to environmental responsibility and serving the area for 37 years. Pack Rat offers a selection of footwear, canoes, and kayaks, camping gear, plus urban and outdoor clothing. A fan page is available on Facebook or packrat.biz for the events calendar or more information. The 23rd annual Polo in the Ozarks will be Saturday at the Buell Farm near Goshen. This family-friendly event will include a polo match, auctions, dinner and dancing, plus a children's area and more. Proceeds to benefit Lifestyles Incorporated, a nonprofit organization supporting adults with disabilities. 521-3581 or lifestylesinc.org for tickets and more information. The KUAF website giveaway and Walton Art Center offering you the chance to win two tickets to the 10x10 art series. Productions include LA Theater Works, Circa, and more. The drawing will be held Friday, September 14th, during the noon edition of Ozarks at Large. Registration and more information available at the website KUAF.com. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, Nail, your indispensable connection to the world. The second annual Mayor's Community-Wide Food Drive in support of the River Valley Regional Food Bank is looking for donations from the community in the days leading up to a rally in Fort Smith on September 6th. If you'd like more information about the food drive, you can call 785-0582. Antoinette Grajeda will be with me tomorrow as we have another brand new edition of Ozarks at Large beginning at noon. Thanks for spending part of your Labor Day with Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. Have a good holiday.